WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Governor Spitzer will resign at 11:30 this morning. According to officials from his office, that's what his 11:30 statement will be. He has scheduled a brief announcement to the press at 11:30 this morning, and no doubt it will be his resignation. According to sources close to the governor, he will be replaced by Lieutenant Governor David Patterson, who will become New York's 55th governor on Monday, so there will be a five-day transition allowing David Patterson to get ready to take controls of the reins of government. Joining us now is Ben Smith from Politico.com. He's mostly been covering the presidential race for the last year, but Ben also is a former Daily News political columnist and has certainly had his eye on Elliot Spitzer over the years. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Brian.
So are you still in shock?
I'm still just totally stunned, yeah. This came so out of the blue.
Has there been any ramification of this for the presidential race?
You know, just because we have to keep, just because everybody feels the need to talk about this 24 hours a day, there's been a bit of sort of speculation that maybe this reminds people of the Monica Lewinsky scandal in a way that either helps or hurts Hillary, depending on who you ask. But I don't think so. Hillary and, I mean, Elliot Spitzer was hardly close to Hillary Clinton. Indeed, he's been nothing but kind of a drag on her this presidential campaign. And so there's no, I mean, there's no real connection.
And it did come into his thinking, I would guess. I mean, you and I have talked in the past about how Spitzer's driver's license plan for illegal immigrants put Hillary Clinton on the spot so heavily in the presidential campaign, and actually ultimately wound up putting Barack Obama perhaps in a more tenuous position there.
Yeah, I think we'll hear about that again.
Because after waffling, Clinton came out against it, and Obama came out for it, and so he wasn't accused of the waffle, but then John McCain would be able to use against him on the campaign trail, well, this Democratic nominee, unlike the woman he was running against, is for giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. That's how liberal he is.
And it is wildly unpopular, yeah. So Elliot Spitzer will have left his mark on this race. But, you know, I mean, I think that moment showed that that Hillary Clinton's political career is not exactly front and center in his calculations, and I'm sure it's not right now.
By the way, Elliot and Silda Spitzer have just entered a car outside their home and are en route to the governor's New York City office. They live on Fifth Avenue on the Upper East Side. They're now going to the governor's office downtown, and that statement by the governor is expected at 11:30 this morning. So I guess Senator Clinton and Senator Obama would have been in the position of having to say whether they think prostitution should be grounds for getting Spitzer out of office if this had gone on and if he had decided to resist.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly, had he decided to resist, it would have been a drag on everybody, including Hillary Clinton. Every New York State Democrat would have been asked about it constantly, and to that degree, it's good for her that he's getting off the stage. But again, I don't think his motivation to get off the stage is to help somebody else out here, you know? I mean, I think it's just he's trapped.
Well, Governor Spitzer came in saying on day one, everything changes. So I guess on day 436 or whatever this is, everything changes again.
Yep.
How much does change in Albany as a result of this? You still have a Democratic governor, a Democratic assembly, a Republican Senate. All the long-term entrenched priorities and disagreements between the parties being what they are over everything from taxes to the Rockefeller drug laws. David Patterson is a liberal Democrat. What does this change?
Well, I think it brings an abrupt end to this period in which, and this was not a notion that was ever broadly popular in New York State, but certainly among, you know, the kind of people who write editorials for the New York Times, the idea that there would be dramatic changes to the way Albany does business, and that's an important cause. The reason Spitzer is hated up there is, first of all, that he was, you know, trying to throw the money changers out of the temple, that he was yelling at them every day about how corrupt they were and they didn't appreciate it. David Paterson is very much a creature of that world. He was a state senator for 20 years, basically a quite obscure one. He was very comfortable in the government up there. And right now that's, you know, very welcome, basically, for a lot of people up there, just to have somebody who can get along, who knows how the system works, who isn't going to go messing with people's prerogatives. But at the same time, nobody expects, I mean, I think this basically brings an end to the idea that the executive is going to challenge the way the legislature does business.
Ben Smith from Politico.com, thanks a lot. And with us next is John Fund, columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Pleasure, Brian.
I bet a lot of people who read and editorialize on and within The Wall Street Journal are happy to see Eliot Spitzer get some comeuppance today.
Well, I think that's also combined with a great deal of sympathy for his wife and family and an understanding of the frailties of human nature. I think Eliot Spitzer is 48 years old. He will keep his law license, I have no doubt. I think he has a good future as a public interest lawyer, as somebody who can stay involved in charitable work, and I wish him well in that endeavor.
You say he will keep his law license. If I remember correctly, when President Clinton resolved the Monica Lewinsky situation, his law license was suspended for 5 years. What makes this different and in that respect less serious?
Well, he may have to go through a suspension, but President Clinton was able to pick up his law license again. The bottom line is the plea agreement is individual to the case. Eliot Spitzer may have held out for things that President Clinton didn't. He clearly wants to stay out of jail. He clearly wants to avoid a long, painfully, publicly embarrassing trial. And the major price for that will have to be the surrender of the executive powers of government, which are very vast.
Do you think that that's ethical if the government really was looking at serious financial crimes against Spitzer? And presumably this goes further than just solicitation of prostitution to what they call structuring and, other crimes that would have to do with financial impropriety that could potentially be felonies. Do you think it's ethical for the government to let somebody off the hook in exchange for resigning from their office?
Well, A, it's done all the time. That doesn't make it right, but it's done all the time. B, prosecutors have to establish priorities. There are only so many people you have available to go after perpetrators of crime. Clearly, prostitution is not a major law enforcement focus, and Governor Spitzer's financial transactions, while they certainly are bizarre and unfortunate, they don't involve an enormous amount of money. It was clearly a matter of private corruption. I think the major reason he has to get off the stage as a governor is not the prostitution, but the fact that by having this several-year-long involvement with a prostitution ring, he was subjecting himself to potential blackmail. I mean, any of those disreputable characters who ran that prostitution ring could have blackmailed him at any time.
Now, these financial crimes, it's still uncertain to most of the public what allegations there are or could be under what kinds of laws. How clear are you on that?
If you engage in financial transactions with the clear intent of hiding their purpose, which goes to some illegal act, you can be accused of structuring, which is arranging your financial affairs in such a way as to avoid detection for the purpose of committing an illegal act.
Is this crime known as restructuring that was apparently, the investigation was apparently triggered by his bank. Now, maybe people at the Wall Street Journal would have more knowledge of this kind of thing than a lot of other journalists. Can you give us some background on that?
Sure. Anyone who has a bank account in this country, especially post 9/11, should be aware that any unusual financial transaction over $10,000 is automatically reported to the Treasury. If they're smaller transactions and there's a mysterious pattern, or there's a sense that people are perhaps dealing with a series of $5,000 transactions in order to try to avoid triggering the $10,000 reporting limit, the bank will go outside the normal boundaries and make a report to the Treasury. And that will go to the local IRS office, and they'll look at it and see if there's a problem or if there's some untoward explanation.
Now, there's been some criticism of the Justice Department coming primarily from some liberal columnists and commentators who say that this prosecution might not be taking place at all if the governor was a Republican, because this kind of structuring, just basically to deceive his wife, is not the kind of violation of public trust or public corruption or involvement with a money-making scheme that's criminal in some way that would normally generate FBI activity, Justice Department activity, spending the taxpayers' money on this. What would you say? Wayne Barrett from the Village Voice earlier was saying that on the show. What's your reaction to that?
Well, first of all of the prosecutors in the public corruption unit that were involved in this are career prosecutors. They're not political appointees. Secondly, I'll agree. I don't think this is a prosecution that would have gone forward under normal circumstances. I think what you have here is the federal government and the state government having an interest in getting Governor Spitzer off the stage. He was a potential blackmail target. He had, I think, sullied the office, and he had completely destroyed his credibility. And the only only leverage they had in him was a potential prosecution. I think what you'd had was a very delicate negotiation in which both sides may have been bluffing. Spitzer saying, maybe I can hang on in office, albeit badly damaged. And the prosecutor saying, well, if you do that, if you don't take this deal in the next few days, we may prosecute you. So this may have been a bluffing game. In the end, Spitzer decided he did not want to test the limits of the federal government. But now there will be no prosecution. But Elliot Spitzer will be off of the political stage, and according to the latest Marist poll, Brian, 70% of New Yorkers wanted him impeached if he stayed in office. So this is being done with the support of the vast majority of the New York State public.
You say there will be no prosecution.
I predict there will be none.
Do you expect a certain kind of plea? Do you have any information?
A misdemeanor plea, perhaps with community service and a fine. Sure.
Community service and a fine. On what charge? What do you think the charge will be? What would he plea to?
It may be, well, that's difficult because there are very few federal misdemeanor counts. Almost all federal crimes are felonies. So it may be that the feds say, if you plead in state court to a misdemeanor, either prostitution or transporting somebody across state lines for purposes of prostitution or the restructuring charge, if you plead to a misdemeanor of something along those lines in state court, we'll accept that as a federal plea and we will drop our plans to prosecute.
And one of the ironies here is that it was Elliot Spitzer, as the Attorney General of New York, who tried to get the banks to get tougher on monitoring all kinds of transactions for possible malfeasance. Isn't that right?
Elliot Spitzer was, in general, not a fan of civil liberties. He vastly expanded the Martin Act, which was a 1921 obscure law that basically said a prosecutor can go in and allege fraud for almost anything, and as long as he's only seeking civil penalties, can basically get injunctions and shut a company down. He went to companies and would say, I think you did wrong. You better pay up an enormous fine. You better fire your current management, install management of my liking, of my choosing. And if you don't do that, I'll drag your company's name in the mud and you'll be destroyed. So Elliot Spitzer has a very mixed record on civil liberties. We reported in the Wall Street Journal today that he was planning to arrest one person in front of his pregnant wife and their three children. That recalls the sort of perp walks that Rudy Giuliani was engaged in the 1980s that the Wall Street Journal also criticized. So Elliot Spitzer did find some bad guys. He did detect malfeasance and corruption, but he soon went on to other targets that were much less appropriate and much less justifiable.
John Fund, Wall Street Journal columnist, thank you very much for coming on with us
today.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute with Elliot Spitzer's resignation scheduled for 11:30. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our daily podcast now includes the whole show. It used to be one segment a day. Now it's the full 2 hours. Sign up for our free daily podcast at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And while you're at it, sign up for our free weekly podcast, Digesting Politics. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I talking mostly about the presidential race, although I have a feeling this week's may include at least one other topic. And Andrea Bernstein joins us now as we are 3 minutes away from the expected resignation of Eliot Spitzer. And Andrea, there's been this kind of video moment on television, which is about over now as Spitzer arrives at his office or is about to arrive at his office. Aerial cameras from helicopters shooting the top of the governor's car after he and his wife entered it at their apartment at Fifth Avenue and 80th Street, heading to his office in Midtown. It reminds me of the O.J. Simpson slow-motion chase, except that, of course, as far as we know, Eliot Spitzer is not trying to run away.
Have we moved to Los Angeles? I mean, that's a common picture on L.A. news is following cars and helicopters. I think part of it is because of the hunger for proximity to this governor who's given us 64 seconds since this news broke.
And that was on Monday afternoon, about 10 after 3 Monday afternoon. He gave that 64-second statement and has not been heard from since, and to the point where the lead editorial in the New York Times today didn't ask Governor Spitzer to resign per se, but it asked him to please let the public know what he's going to do.
Yes, and but... Yeah. there have been a sort of a few things like that, but I mean, I think it was sort of make a really good case or resign. So I think that, as somebody who is a prosecutor himself, he probably saw that he didn't have much of a case. I also think that it's not clear that the legal intricacies of this are over, usually when the U.S. Attorney's Office makes a public announcement, there's a realization that the information, the evidence that they're going to gather is stopped. However, usually would make an announcement of a prostitution ring, for example, because they want the crime to stop. And they felt they had enough evidence, such as it was, on whatever crimes they think the governor may have committed. Now, there may be no prosecution. We're in our newsroom trying to find out now if anybody has ever gone to jail simply for this crime of structuring. There seems to be some belief in the prosecutorial world that it has happened, although as of now, no one can come up with a case. But whether he will be able to function as a lawyer in any way after this, I think is... highly questionable.
Looking at the motorcade, it doesn't seem like Governor Spitzer's car has gotten a police escort. He's stopping at lights with everyone else. So though he's out of the congestion pricing debate now, there is just enough congestion in Midtown Manhattan that this 11:30 announcement, since it's 11:30 right this second, will not take place at 11:30, but a few minutes from now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, it's very rare for officials to use their lights and sirens. There has to be a real sort of, emergency. This is clearly not one. As a matter of fact, they're probably stopping at every yellow light. I'm sure that they do not want to rush this announcement.
Although at this point, Eliot may want to get out of the car as quickly as possible if he's by himself with his wife there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one can't underestimate the sort of personal agony that this is causing. And I know that there's been, some applause, some glee, and some quarters that he got his comeuppance. But I think no one would deny that this is a personal tragedy for the Spitzer family, for the wife, and for the three daughters. My guess is that Eliot Spitzer realizes that too. What a tragedy it is for their whole family that all of this occurred and is now coming to light.
It was consistently reported that Mrs. Spitzer was among those urging the governor either not to resign or to hold out for a relatively long time before resigning. Do you have any details about her position on that?
I have also heard that, but I'm not sure who's talked to Sildewall Spitzer in the last 3 days. I haven't. I have heard that she was not for it, and that one of his chief advisors, Lloyd Constantine, was not for it. I think the sort of political circle around Eliot Spitzer had more of a sense of reality about where to go with this. Lloyd Constantine was a top attorney in the Attorney General's office under former Attorney General Bob Abrams and then later under Spitzer. He was one of the people who directed and helped put together all these very, very famous prosecutions. But he is not the top political advisor in the Eliot Spitzer circle. I would also add that Eliot Spitzer managed to rise through prominence through the power of these prosecutions, but he never had a difficult political moment in his career other than his initial campaign against Dennis Vacco, and then, of course, in 1994 when he ran for the Democratic nomination for Attorney General and lost. But since then, since he's been elected, he has never had a political crisis. And I think that, you know, one of the Hillary Clinton arguments that she's been tested, I think that there is certainly something to be said for having had to face something like this, because then you at least have some past history of what are the right things you should do, how should you handle it. And it's something that Eliot Spitzer, since basically the year 2000, he's had enormous popularity. He sailed to re-election and then to election as governor, and he's not had a time when his sort of political judgments have really been called on to kick in, unlike, say, Bill Clinton.
Our crack observers of New York City street corners tell us he is now passing an intersection that is two blocks from his office, so we're very close to hearing this resignation of Governor Spitzer. What do you expect to actually hear from him?
I would expect a similar statement that, you know, it's a tragedy for him and his family. He wants to spend time with his family and repair those relationships. And he's sorry to the people of New York that he let them down. And I would not expect to hear much more. I'd be astonished if he took questions, although everything about this has been astonishing. But it would potentially put him in legal jeopardy. And I also think, I mean, the questions that people have for him, some of them are, you know, quite salacious. And I'm not sure why he would subject himself to that.
In fact, the statement that you have from his office, I believe, says that he will issue a statement.
He will deliver a statement.
Deliver a statement. That's it. Rather than, you know, deliver a statement means he will speak it, he will appear in person to deliver the statement rather than issue a written statement. But nonetheless, it does look very unlikely that he will stay and take questions from reporters. I wonder if he will announce any details of a plea agreement, for example.
It does, by the way, say Eliot Spitzer delivers brief statement. We don't know about the prosecution. There's been the U.S. Attorney's Office has been completely mum. There's been no clearly sourced stories that I've read in the last several days that definitively indicate there have been plea discussions, that his resignation was potentially part of them. I mean, it would be shocking if his lawyers hadn't been talking to the U.S. Attorney's Office. But none of that has been clearly delineated at this point. So he may announce that. But I don't know how much you can fit into a brief statement.
I wonder what Eliot Spitzer and family do after this. As Clyde Haberman wrote in the Times yesterday, he will now become a punchline. He will go from being Governor Eliot Spitzer to Client 9 when people look at him, and he's going to have to live with that. I wonder if he can continue to live in the middle of New York City with that hanging over his head, or just what happens to this guy and his poor family.
Yeah, I think will now become a punchline is a little too late. He became an instant punchline. This is one of the things that's so heartbreaking for people who supported him. I mean, you know, let's not forget he was at the beginning of his government. And when you're at the beginning of your government, that's the moment at which you are attracting all the true believers, all the idealists are in your government, they believe in your agenda, and they have uprooted in some cases, and they have moved to Albany, and they have thrown themselves full force into what they see as this positive agenda. If he were 7-8 years into office, the sort of superstars of his administration probably would have left. That's what usually happens. But it's the very beginning. And, you know, there's an awful lot of people that had hitched their stars to his. And, you know, those are the people who are telling me that they are just heartbroken because they feel that now whether they can do all of that is in question. As for him and his family, what did the Clinton family do when they went to Martha's Vineyard after Bill Clinton's Monica Lewinsky speech? I mean, I think that, you know, what happens inside families is something that probably deserves to stay inside families.
Right. Well, Spitzer apparently arriving at his office now. I wonder if his driver knew that they were on television as that motorcade went down. Talk about video surveillance and tickets for running red lights. Boy, every video camera in Television City in New York was trained on them. WNYC's Arun Venugopal is now at the governor's office. Arun, set the scene.
Well, Brian, it's hot and it's really crowded in here. You can probably hear the shouts of reporters surrounding me in this room. There's a real nervous tension and the ongoing buzz of reporters calling into their respective media outlets and telegraphing the rise and fall of Elliot Spitzer in 60 seconds. So it's both, like I said, a nervous tension, but also kind of sad as people kind of have to sum up the career and all the allegations very fast. And we're just waiting for the word. We've heard that he's not in the building yet, but everybody's just waiting on the edge of their seats. 2 minutes is what we just heard.
2 minutes, because we did see him drive into what appeared to be some kind of carport or something like that in conjunction with the building. So he does appear to be there right now. It had the look, just watching this bizarre moment on television, of the cameras following Spitzer's car all the way from his apartment on the Upper East Side to this office. It had the feel, in a way, with the one black car, of a one-car funeral procession. And I wonder if that's the tone at all that you're hearing among the reporters, because, yes, it's a spicy moment, it's a juicy political moment, all of that. It's a salacious moment, but it's also a very sad moment.
Yeah, I do think that you have both those aspects coming. You have people who talk just like any average New Yorker out there who's just sort of shocked by it, but also there is that quality of it. People, from what I've seen at press conferences I've attended of the governor, that, you know, there's a fairly professional relationship there, that he was the kind of guy you could engage with in press conferences, ask questions. I mean, he might deflect some questions, but he never used indignation as an excuse to avoid it or to put people in their place, that kind of a thing. There was a kind of an aggressive, dynamic relationship there. And I think today, you know, there is, of course, that energy, excitement, a professional sense of, like, handling the story and trying to grasp the details and put it all together. But I wouldn't really say that I sense any sense of, you know, the schadenfreude or the lascivious kind of thing that, you know, you might be reading about in the tabloids, the reader.
Andrea?
Yeah, I don't think schadenfreude is the dominant emotion. I mean, I think there are some quarters in New York where people are feeling it. But the dominant emotion that I'm picking up is shock, stunning, being stunned by it, and being sad for his family. And I think one thing that's interesting about Spitzer, I mean, his relationship with the press has certainly gotten testier in the last 8-9 months as he's had some difficulties. But he is not known, for example, when Rudy Giuliani was mayor, he was known for being combative, just like Elliot Spitzer. He was quite frequently combative at his daily press briefings. I'm speaking of Rudy Giuliani with reporters. It's not something that Spitzer was known for, sort of particularly going after reporters, trying to embarrass them in front of their colleagues, criticizing them. Mostly, I mean, I think for much of his career, the press was his huge ally and friend. And one of the reasons that he is where he is now is because when he began these Wall Street prosecutions, he became an international press darling. So the press really helped him throughout his career. But for the most part, relationship with reporters ranged from cordial to warm. So I don't think on the part of a lot of the press, there's a sense of, oh, he got his comeuppance.
You talked about not being the sixth, seventh, eighth year of an administration when a lot of longtime top star advisors would have left. I wonder what happens to Elliot Spitzer's advisors now, to the commissioners, for that matter, who he has appointed. We heard, and we'll probably have to talk about this after he gives the statement, but we heard State Senator Marty Golden and Assemblyman Richard Brodsky on the show earlier, talking about taking a look at some of those appointees, and that maybe Governor Patterson coming in would get rid of some of those appointees. I got the sense, though they didn't name names, that there are some people appointed by Governor Spitzer who they don't like.
I am going to guess that it's sort of the inner circle, the secretary, it's called, sort of analogous to the chief of staff in the White House, the sort of political advisor types who would find their jobs most at jeopardy. When you get down to the commissioner level, I mean, Spitzer has hired a lot of popular figures in New York. The sort of people who watch government, the good government group, seem to respect a lot of his commissioners. They seem to enjoy working with them. And, I mean, David Patterson was minority leader, but that was the largest office he ran. It didn't have a huge staff, so it's not like he has a giant number of people around him.
Arun, set the scene for us a little bit more. I'm looking on my TV monitor at what appears to be a plain kind of conference room with white or yellow walls, a blue curtain behind, a blue podium with a seal of the state of New York, an American flag behind that, behind whoever will be speaking at that podium, a New York State flag behind that. Where is this room exactly?
This is on Third Avenue. This is a building here at the governor's office, and right now I'm just waiting for any second now. A door keeps on opening, a door at the front of this room, the left side, and you have the entire, press corps just training their eyes, and you have all these photographers who are just aiming their cameras like guns.
And it is pretty funny to watch on television because I have a monitor here in which we can see it from the back of the room perspective. And, yes, that door keeps opening, and I guess aides or whoever they are keep being the ones to walk through. And every time the door begins to open, all of these still cameras with their flash bulbs pop up in the air like a row of rabbits. Here it's happening again. And one...
Okay.
Two, three, four, and now more people are entering the room. I don't know who all those people are. None of them the governor yet, Arun?
No, not yet. I can't see it. You got about 700 people, like you just said. I saw Errol Cockfield, his press aide, his communications director, enter, and others appear to be lawyers and other aides. And there he is. He's approaching the podium, pulling out a speech, presumably his resignation speech. He's standing next to his wife, Bilda.